We are in 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel 15, I believe. Second Samuel 15. Now, David is abdicating the throne to his son Absalom leaving town, and so is trying to leave things where the Lord can bring him back if the Lord wants him back, and of course we know that he does. So David leaves Jerusalem, crosses the brook Kidron down in verse 23. Down in verse 30, even goes up Mount Olivet, which is the same course that Jesus Christ took on the night before he was crucified. And so all this is coming together. You find in verse 31, let's start there. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel, one of David's friends and counselors, is among the conspirators with Absalom. David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now, we closed last time going through some stuff about counsel. I just decided to take a sidebar on it and talk about counsel a little bit. What we covered last time was kind of the survey of, you know, how counsel works in the Bible, and you start out with bad counsel with Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, giving them bad counsel that doesn't work. Then, of course, you have the high priest who gives counsel after Urim and Thummim. That's the Lord's counsel, but it's just a back and forth, disaster, good counsel, disaster, good counsel, and so on and so forth, all the way through the Bible, finally ending in Revelation chapter 3. I wanted to go ahead and just give you a few more things here. Everybody knows to hear counsel and receive instruction that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. That much is true. And you need to cultivate, a Christian has to cultivate where to get counsel from. Because there's one thing for sure, you're going to get counsel from the world. They're going to come at you all four, and they're going to shove it down your throat if they can. And so you're going to need to find a way to get good counsel. Now, there's a whole long Bible studies on this, but let me just take you through a little bit of a survey and hit some high points. It's going to take just a little while, but you know there are questions that should be answered for young Christians and old ones alike. Look in Proverbs chapter 12. Going to be back and forth a little bit here just for a few minutes. But just some precepts about counsel, which I happen to think that modern Americans and modern Christians are absolutely stupid on. To start with, modern Christians don't even have a book of perfect counsel anymore. They believe. They have it if they want it. But as far as, you know, having a book that they've been taught to believe and that they're willing to, you know, make a decision on and die by if necessary, most Christians don't have that. So y'all are the exception if you'll receive it. You know, sometimes we don't want to die for the counsel that we accept. But you should have right counsel. Look in Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12, go down to verse 15 real quick. And some of these you've probably committed to memory. But you'll just notice that the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. So I know you put the two parts of the verse together, and what you can't help but come up with is that we're all fools. We're all idiots left to ourselves. Okay? And so what you have to then put is the end of that, on the end of the verse, into that equation, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. Now, we'll see in a second, it's not just any counsel. Like I said, the world's going to give you counsel, that's for sure. And you're going to get all kinds of stuff from all kinds of people. Some of them are idiots, and some of them are educated idiots. But largely, they don't know what they're doing, and they may be demon-possessed, just so you know. So just know that, you know, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. You are not suitable. The wisdom that you have naturally is not suitable for you to make life-changing decisions and life and death decisions. Horse sense is good. Common sense, when it works, is good. But sometimes what you think is common sense is stupidity. Just to be clear. Because the way of a fool is right in his own eyes. I mean, you think you're right, left to yourself. Doesn't mean you are. And again, the back half of the verse, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. So you need to find counsel. Look in Proverbs 19:21. Proverbs 19:21. Just some precepts. And once again, this points out to you our bankruptcy. For there are many devices in a man's heart. Don't you find that to be true? You know yourself pretty well, don't you? Have you been monitoring your thoughts at all in relation to the Bible? Because if you do, you learn that you don't think like God. Right? And so there are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. Now, that's the counsel you want. Not just any counsel, but when we're talking about counsel in general, receiving counsel, we're talking about the counsel of the Lord. Now notice, if you will, go to a New Testament passage real quick. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Then we're going back to the Old Testament, so just keep a finger in Proverbs if you're of a mind to. 1 Corinthians 4. And notice verse 5. Now this is talking in prospect or in context about us Christians judging one another, you know, as brothers and sisters. And notice it says in verse 5, therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise, the praise of God. And so you just need to know that what your brother's doing is not necessarily your business. Right? And rather than judging him, you should take care of your own affairs. Okay? And, you know, in time, all the counsels of the hearts will be made manifest, because that's what messes everybody up, is the counsels of their own hearts, or listening to somebody else with a wrong heart give counsel. Now, let's go back to... that's not what I want to do. Yes, Proverbs chapter 21. Go back to Proverbs. So I know this is rambling a little bit, but there are just some precepts here that are really important. Notice down in verse 30, with respect to the fact that it's the Lord's counsel that should matter. We already saw a verse on that, but notice verse 30, there is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. So if you're receiving counsel that goes against the Word of God, you can be assured your counselor is wrong. Because there is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. In the end, His counsel comes to pass. If you will, go back to Psalms 33. Let me nail that down. Psalm 33. Again, to confirm that the counsel that we seek is God's counsel. And so, hear counsel and receive instruction. It says, in a multitude of counselors, there's safety. I think we'll see those verses in a little while. Now, here it is, 33:11. The counsel of the Lord standeth forever, the thoughts of His heart to all generations. Okay, the counsel of the Lord standeth forever, the thoughts of His heart to all generations. Well, those thoughts have to be written down in words for them to stand to all generations. So you either have the words of God in your lap or you don't. Okay? Because they're said to stand forever. Now, importantly, back to Proverbs 22, verse 20. Proverbs 22. And notice, we've covered this recently. Have not I written to thee excellent things in counsels and knowledge? Can we just make sure that everybody knows that it's God's counsel you should be seeking? And any other counsel is going to mess you up. So it's God's counsel that matters. Go to Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews 6, I know we're covering lots of ground fast, but I wanted to hit it. Hebrews chapter 6, and notice verse 17. Hebrews 6, 17. Wherein God willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of His counsel, confirmed it with an oath. You think you don't have a Bible that reflects the culture anymore? You've got a Bible that reflects God's culture. That's all that matters. Because His counsel is immutable. It's unchangeable. It's permanent. It reaches out to all generations forever. And so, all the stuff that you get from backslidden apostate Christianity that tries to lead you away from the words of a perfect book, it's of the devil. Okay? Just so you know, the counsel that comes from those areas are demonic. They're of the world. They're wrong. They're the deceit and delusion of men's minds. The counsel you want is the counsel from the Lord. Let me see if I can find another. I wanted you to see Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20. I'm just confirming that the counsel you want is God's counsel. And God has given you that counsel. God has given you the thoughts of His heart. God has given you His words. Acts chapter 20. And you'll notice in verse 27. For I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God. So as late as Paul, here's Paul saying, I've given you the whole counsel. Okay? So can we establish that we've got the counsel? So now that you've got the counsel, you better be careful what you do with it. Look in Proverbs chapter 1. Because we know that men love darkness rather than light. And that old nature of yours and mine embraces the darkness so fast it makes your head spin. Right? Old nature. Not the new nature, not the new creature, but the old nature. The old man, it's still very much there. And so here's the Lord has supplied you with a well, the book, and presumably a church that is putting out light. It's putting out water. You're accountable for that. Now I say you, I say we. We're accountable for that. We're accountable for what we get. We're accountable for whether we do something with it or not. And just be careful about ignoring right counsel. Proverbs 1, verse 5. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. You know, first time you read the Bible through, or the first time you read a book of the Bible through, you know, a lot of it kind of ricochets off your brain. And the reason why is because you're not used to thinking that way. And it's written in a way where the Holy Spirit has to work on you for some of the precepts to sink in. And so you shouldn't expect to read the Bible the first time and just get the whole dose. Nobody does that. Doc said he read the book through, I think, 150 times before he had to start listening, you know, because his eyes were so bad. Okay, and at that juncture, he's saying, I'm just now getting some of it. So don't think you've arrived, because you have not arrived. It's just important that you accept the truth in the little spoonfuls that the Lord gives them to you. Do something with it, right? Look in Proverbs 1 again, 1:25, and notice it gets real serious down through here. Let's start with verse 24. Because I've called and you have refused, I've stretched out my hand and no man regarded, but ye have set at naught all my counsel and would none of my reproof. So he says, I will also laugh at your calamity. Now, nobody wants that. Who wants, you know, when bad stuff happens, who wants to feel that God's laughing at them? Well, nobody wants that. Okay, we'll do something with the truth now. Verse 26, I will mock. You imagine that? God mocking? Oh, the Lord wouldn't do that. Said He would. Said He would. I'll mock when your fear cometh, When your fear cometh as desolation, your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they will not find me, for that they hated knowledge. Romans 1, we're not really through that area of it yet, but Sunday school, Romans 1, verse 29, for that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. You have a Christianity now that wants everything positive, and anything negative is to be rejected. Well, I'm sorry, but reproof is negative. Reproof is negative. And what he said was that they would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Well, reproof is so integral to knowledge and wisdom and understanding and instruction that you can't peel that out of there. You can't debone it like a chicken breast. You can't. Because reproof is part of it. No, you're wrong. Big old red X on your paper, D plus. You're wrong on that. And you have to accept that, because if you don't, you got a problem. Okay, let's look at something else here as far as this counsel is concerned. We're closing in on it now. Look in Proverbs 27. Proverbs 27. And here's what you need to do. You need to surround yourself with the right kind of counsel. Proverbs 27. And notice verse 9. Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. So doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Now, you know what? I know that you have acquaintances that you're trying to reach for Christ. You may have been close to them going back to the bad old days. That's all fine. I got news for you. You need to dump the bad counselors. It says in verse 9, so doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Listen, what you need is friends that will counsel you right. Now, what is right counsel? It's the book. If you got friends and all they're interested in talking about is what we heard talked about at that funeral last week, I'd dump some friends so fast it'd make your head spin. Because that's what's needed, and that's what's hard for you to accept, is that people that are ungodly are going to counsel you ungodly. There's going to come a day when you're broken and hurt and crying, and they're going to come up beside you, and motives might be right. Their motives might be fine. They may love you. It may be your father. It may be your mother. It may be your sister. And they love you. You've been best friends forever, and you go all the way back to grade school. You went to preschool together. You've been friends for a long time, and they care for you. But their counsel is wrong. Their counsel's demon-possessed. Their counsel's from this world, and you need not to listen. It's just true. Now, I know that's a little harsh for some, but I'm sorry. Look in Proverbs 24 now. Proverbs 24. You need to surround yourself with the right kind of counsel. And by that, I mean, when I talk about counsel now, I'm talking about the Lord's counsel, correct? Proverbs 24, verse 6, for by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war. And notice in a multitude... And in multitude of counselors, there is safety. Okay, you'll see in a second. But what everybody wants to do is get all kinds of advice and then cherry pick the advice they want. Okay? Now, there's several places it talks about a multitude of counselors in Proverbs. It's not talking about getting all the counsel you can and then cherry picking what you like. What you're looking at is a multitude of counselors. You need as many counselors around you counseling you from the Word of God, so that you're getting a representation of God's counsel. And so you make a decision there. It's not giving you the okay to get some from here and some from there and, oh, I like that one better. Which is the way most people come in for counsel, by the way. As a rule, most folks come in my office and they kind of already know kind of what they want to do. I'm not accusing all of you of doing that. I'm saying... And if you came in recently and I gave you counsel, don't worry, I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying, in general, you know, folks come in with that prospect because they kind of know what they want to do and they're looking for God to confirm that that's what they want to do. No. So Proverbs 24, 6, for by wise counsel, that's God's counsel, coming through a man, through friends, thou shalt make thy war. Now you should just consider this because war comes up in this context pretty often. Whether you like it or not, this life is a fight. Somebody's out to destroy you. You have an adversary that is offensively seeking to mess you up. It's a fight. And so you better make sure and get the right counsel and respond to that, right? Okay, Proverbs 20. Verse 18, every purpose is established by counsel. Okay, who's counsel? It's God's counsel, right? You have a Christian book here that's trying to tell you God's view on counsel. And when you're reading counsel here, you're looking for God's counsel, not something else. So it's primarily the Bible. It's primarily then teaching and preaching. Then it's primarily you surrounding yourself with friends that know the book. Amen. Do your friends that you hang out the most with know the book? I know you have to go to work with lost folks. I know that. But you don't have to go out on Friday night with lost folks. And you don't have to go to church with lost folks. And you ought not sit down and counsel much with them either. You're called to shed light into their darkness, not lost folks shedding their darkness into your light. It's just true. And we're really bad about this. I mean, maybe Bible believers not so bad, but right now you're living in a Christianity that has no light. They don't believe they have a book. And, I mean, they get away with abomination in some churches they go to. You need to get away from that. Look, if you will, in Proverbs 19. Proverbs 19. I'll quit raving in a minute, but so far I'm not convinced that you're convinced. 19:20. Hear counsel and receive instruction that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. Well, that again, I'm just telling you, that is not you sounding out 12 of your best friends forever and taking what you want from it. It's you going to somebody that knows some Bible and bouncing it off them and letting them, and you know, there might be some different differences of opinions on how exactly you should do it, but you should figure out somewhere within range of this to hear to hear what God would want from you in this thing. And then you have to decide, and then you live with the results, right? Yes, you do. Okay, if I can read my... Oh, yeah, 15:22. I was scribbling stuff the last minute. 15:22. Now, just notice, are you strong-willed? You go off on a tangent real fast. You a shooting star? Are you a rocket ship? Well, just watch. 15:22. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed. If you are quick to make a snap judgment and you don't bother to fold anybody else into it, I mean, there are times you have to make a judgment. I get that. But in major life choices, God usually doesn't require a decision right now. It's very seldom you don't have time to seek counsel and to pray and to fast if necessary. This haste and snap judgment, this shooting star stuff, will ruin your life because you're a dork. You just... flashpoint decisions, and you do it because you're mad, or you do it because you're hurt, or because some whim strikes. That's not the reason this book was written. Okay, 22, Proverbs 15, 22. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established. And again, those counselors are folks that are supposed to be reflecting the Word of God. Look in chapter 11, Proverbs 11, verse 4. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but is that what I wanted? 11:14. I missed the one, sorry. 11:14. I don't know why I write so small. Where no counsel is, the people fall. Now that's not the person falls. That's the people fall. But in multitude of counselors, there is safety. Again, that shows you it's not just talking about you going and just getting counsel off the street and asking your first grade best friend what she thinks, you know, over coffee. If she didn't know any Bible, don't even ask her. Right? Now, just to drive this home one last time, look in Revelation 3. This is the last time the word counsel shows up. I know I touched it last week, but it don't hurt to touch it again. Revelation chapter 3, verse 18. Okay, I counsel thee. This is the Lord counseling thee. You have a red letter edition? Is it in red letters? Okay. I counsel, this is the last time counsel shows up, thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with eye salve that thou mayest see. Now, this first of all, you'll notice verse 14, Laodiceans. This is written to the Laodicean church. The last time the word counsel shows up in the Bible, it's written to Laodiceans. You're in the Laodicean church age. Okay? You know what? Your Laodiceans are bereft of counsel. Because they've been trained out of their Bible. And they've been trained out of preaching. And anybody that's negative shouldn't be listened to, because they're going to hurt your self-esteem. And all that nonsense. So by the time it's over with, you have just a bunch of pap-sucking babies. And they're unable to handle anything that's not the sweetest in the world. We are remiss in that. And it is still available. He says, I'm offering you counsel. Okay, if you're a Laodicean, there's still counsel available. It's in this book. And I wouldn't even go to the other books. I would stay away from an NIV, because it's not going to give you the right stuff. Okay? Anyway, so we can go on from there. Back to 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel. And verse 31. And once again, here's the, I pray thee, says David, that you may turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. And Ahithophel is the guy who was a great counselor. Verse 23 of chapter 16. The counsel with which Ahithophel counseled in those days was as if a man had inquired of the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. So this is a guy that's in tune and in touch. And he's now turned on David. So now he's going to give counsel that tries to destroy David, a type of Christ, but he's still awfully wise. I got news for you. The devil is still awfully wise. And the world in their own right are awfully wise. And they're just trying to ruin you. They're trying to destroy your loyalty to Jesus Christ. Okay? And so let's turn the counsel of Ahithophel to foolishness. And it came to pass that when David, verse 32, was come to the top of the mount where he worshipped God, behold, Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. Ahithophel was his counselor. Hushai, in what was it, 1 Chronicles 27:33, was his companion. So Hushai is his friend. And it says in verse 33, unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. I'll be worried about you. Somebody might get killed in all this. So if you go with me, you know, I'm going to be worried about you getting hurt because I love you. Actually, you'd be better off staying here serving my son and giving me and being my spy. That sounds dangerous in its own right, by the way. Verse 34, but if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou from me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. And again, this is a thing where David seems more concerned and fearful about the counsel of Ahithophel than the rebellion or whatever the plans of the strategy of Absalom are. He's more concerned about Ahithophel than he is Absalom. So that would go to show you just how important counsel is, I would think, right? I was going to say that the council sets the tone for how the war is going to be fought. So I keep saying, and you know, by good counsel, you might war a good warfare, is because really what you're equipping yourself to do with the right counsel is to fight the fight. And if you're not getting the right counsel, you're looking to be defeated. Back to verse 35. And hast thou not here with thee Zadok and Abiathar, the priests? Therefore it shall be that what thing soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz and Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them ye shall send unto me everything that ye hear. Verse 37, so Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. Now, when David was a little past the top of the hill, it's going to take a little break and give you another thing or two here before it goes into how that council works. 16:1, and when David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth. Okay, I mean, so Ziba came with Mephibosheth. When David brought Mephibosheth into his household and was going to feed him at his table perpetually, so Ziba comes, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins and 100 of summer fruits and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king says, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Okay? Now David has already been subject to some rotten dealings by Jonadab. Remember? Jonadab, the one that advised Amnon how to get his sister, right? And by the way, who was there on the scene when Absalom had killed Amnon, and he's standing there when David receives the word that Amnon's now dead. David's broken up over it. And Jonadab says, oh, don't worry. All your sons haven't been killed. It's only Amnon. So here's the guy that engineered it, and there he is, speaking in David's ear, patting David on the shoulder like he's the good guy. He's a suck-up. Pardon my French. That's what he is. And Ziba's the same thing. Ziba's the same thing. He's the same deceitful little thingamajig that Jonadab is. He is... promotes his own self as being faithful and true to David when that's the last thing that he is. He devised this story, as we find out later. Mephibosheth did not do that. Mephibosheth was of the household of Saul. And so it would be natural enough to think that maybe now that he thinks that Absalom's going to be on top, that this is David getting, you know, repercussion from taking over for Saul or that sort of thing. But Mephibosheth did not do that. This is Ziba totally trying to trash his master, Mephibosheth, to get in good with David. This guy belongs in Congress. But he sowed strife. According to Proverbs, he separated chief friends. I mean, Mephibosheth loves David. And David loved Mephibosheth's dad, and that's why he's given Mephibosheth all that he's given him. And here comes this fool in, trying to destroy that, for no other reason than that he wants to be promoted. He's a sorry, low-down, no-good so-and-so. Right? Verse 3, and the king said, "Where is thy master's son?" And Ziba said unto the king, "Behold, he abideth at Jerusalem." For he said to, "Today shall the house of Israel restore the kingdom of my father." Well, that's not what he said at all. But, you know, one of the things that's being played out here, just think about this, is, you know, yes, Jonadab betrayed David really bad, right? I mean, he was deserved to die for it, right? Here is this guy pulling this stunt. But somewhere in the back, you know, by the time this all plays out and David knows what's going on in a couple of chapters, you know, what has to be resounding back in the back of David's head is, yeah, but I betrayed somebody too. Because Bathsheba, Uriah, right? I mean, as sorry as Jonathan was, or Jonadab was, as sorry as Ziba was, David was just as sorry and low down for doing what he did, right? So, you know, it's sowing reaping. It's David now, and he's right now, but David being tormented in his own mind and heart, and probably the Lord putting his finger on it a little bit and digging in, because David thinks that now that, you know, Mephibosheth, one of his dearest and presumably most loyal, has turned on him. Ahithophel's turned on him. Jonadab turned out to be a skank. And David feels himself surrounded now by skanks. But what he did was skanky too. Right? Skank's not a bad word, is it? I don't think so. At least, good. That's good. Because I got a reaction there, I just wanted to say. All right, verse 4. Then said the king to Ziba. And so David has, he feels no choice. I mean, he's responding to the fact that he thinks now that Mephibosheth has turned on him. Then said the king to Ziba, "Behold, thine are all that pertained unto Mephibosheth." And Ziba said, piously, no doubt, "I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king." Oh, you're the show of loyalty, the show of worship, the lip service, right? When he's playing this whole thing, he has lied through his teeth and done all that he can. The words of a talebearer are as wounds going down into the innermost parts of the belly. Look in Proverbs 12 real quick. Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12, 22. "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. They that deal truly are his delight." Look in chapter 16, a few pages over, 16:27. "An ungodly man diggeth up evil." He's a journalist looking for muck, right? "An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips are as a burning fire. A froward man," willfully contrary is the definition. "A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. A violent man enticeth his neighbor, and leadeth him into the way that is not good. He shutteth his eyes to devise froward things, willfully contrary. Moving his lips, he bringeth evil to pass." And that's what Ziba did. I mean, it was blatant. He lied like a dog about a good man who had benefited from the tremendous grace of David and never betrayed the grace. But Ziba saw his opportunity to advance himself and step on Mephibosheth and presumably ruin him. It turned out he didn't ruin him. David wound up giving him half back, right? And presumably because David couldn't be sure which was which, who was truly right, who was lying, who wasn't. So that's a bad position to put somebody in. But this is something that was never, could not be fully reversed. Whatever else is the case, when you, by your mouth, devise this kind of evil, you know, it might be ameliorated a little bit. I mean, he gave it all to Ziba, but then came back later when he learned the other side of the story and took half back and gave it back to Mephibosheth. But Mephibosheth still didn't get the full his full reward, what was originally promised, right? So it was irreversible. So you do irreversible damage. It's really hard to restore somebody's reputation totally after you've lied about them. Okay, back to verse 4. Then said the king to Ziba, "Behold, thine are all that pertain unto Mephibosheth." And Ziba said, "I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, Mr. Pius." Oh, I got to quit. Yeah, we'll quit there. I didn't realize it was so late. Any questions or comments?